The Advanced Opera Workshop at the Jacobs School of Music will present 3 one-act operas in a production directed by Carol Vanesse on April 20th at 7 p.m. and the 21st at 4 p.m. On the program are Rachmaninoff's Aleko, Hindemith's Hin und Zurück, and American composer Neely Bruce's first opera from 1965, Pyramus and Thisbe. I spoke with Neely Bruce in the WFIU studios. How did you decide on this story?
Well, David, my motivation was very simple. I wanted to write an opera. I was a senior in undergraduate school, and I thought, what can I do? Well, I had recently seen a production of Midsummer Night's Dream, and I was aware of Pyramus and Thisbe as the play within the play in the fifth act there. It's rehearsed throughout the show by the group of people who are known as the Mechanicals. They're the tradesmen of Athens who go out in the woods to rehearse this play in secret, and then they get caught up in the madness of the lovers in this forest and the king and queen of the fairies and stuff like this. So anyway, they're rehearsing all this, and the climax of their subplot of the piece is the production of Pyramus and Thisbe as a wedding gift. Well, I took the text that they actually speak and just extracted it from the fifth act. There are comments by other members of the court while they're doing it, which are basically the sort of comments that say, what a bunch of idiots. and they do mangle the story in various ways, although the basic outlines are there. But this is one of those great stories that is so preposterous that it, in fact, invites parody in and of itself. So Shakespeare, I think, has not done anything to the story that's not inherent in the story itself, except it's very extreme. And, you know, he's a master of comic plays. And every line is just hysterically funny. And so you take out all that other stuff, and it becomes a tragedy enacted by buffoons. And I tried to get that in the setting that I did. In other words, opera does this extremely well. There's the whole idea of the drama giocoso of Mozart and Da Ponte, which is, it's simultaneously a tragedy and a comedy. And that's what my piece is. It's a little miniature drama giocoso. So, you know, Pyramus really does kill himself. Thisbe really does kill herself. There's really violence on stage. The lion attacks, you know, Thisbe, etc. But, of course, at the same time, it's just ridiculous. So there we have it.
The way you wrote this, from what I understand, it was written more specifically for this sort of setting, this sort of opera workshop setting. Can you explain what that means?
Sure. Most pianists, when they're in undergraduate school, that's my undergraduate major, piano, take chorus or something like that, chamber music to satisfy the ensemble requirements. But I took opera workshop for 2 years. And my mentor in that opera workshop was Sylvia Debenport, who was at the University of Alabama at the time and then went to Arizona State University in Tempe. She was an alumna of Indiana University. The person that I learned more about opera than any other person in my life. She was a brilliant director, and I went to her. I called her Sylvia after I was out of school, but at that time she was Miss Debenport. So I went to Miss Debenport as a first semester senior with sketches for the piece and the completed dance movement at the end, the Bergamask. And I said, if you like this and you'll do it with the workshop, I'll finish it, which was a rather audacious thing to do. But I knew that she liked me, and she also said that she had a soft spot for these faux Elizabethan things, which my piece is. So she said, sure. And I finished it, and we got it in rehearsal, and we had a very nice premiere. And then she did it many times after that. I don't know exactly how many times, but at least half a dozen. But then she retired, and now she's deceased. And nobody else has done it until Carol Vanesse took it up for this production.
So what do you do different in an opera workshop setting that may make it stand apart from a main stage opera? What are the benefits, perhaps, of a workshop setting, do you think?
Well, that's an interesting thing. I'm not sure what the benefits are, but I can tell you the constraints and what really works very well with this piece. In the first place, because it's short and because of the way the text is structured, you can't have too many big pieces for anybody. There are no occasions for ensembles, for example. There's simply the monologues of the various characters. So I had to cobble together a duet in the center of the piece for Pyramus and Thisbe to sing, from little snippets that are right there in the middle when they're singing. The basic thing is that they're separate. It's a Romeo and Juliet type thing. The parents don't want them to get together, but they live in adjoining houses separated by a wall. And there's a chink in the wall, and they meet and they converse they kiss through the wall's chink. It's a ridiculous situation in itself. But anyway, we have a character. The mechanicals have contrived this character named Wall, who represents the wall and holds his fingers out, you know, sideways with an angle between them to make the chink between the wall. And so there's this buffoonery of sort of trying to kiss each other through the wall. And it has to be seen and heard to be believed. I don't want to spoil this for the audience. But anyway, it's extremely funny. But there's just little snippets of text in the middle of this, but we repeat it and turn it into sort of a centerpiece of the opera. That's the only real ensemble piece. I wasn't going to have a chorus, but there were people left over. So there is a little chorus, and they just come on and sing. They sing a little bit of what the prologue sings at the end. And then at the end, they repeat what Thisbe's last line. Thisbe stabs herself and she says, "And farewell, friends, thus Thisbe ends. Adieu, adieu, adieu." And the chorus comes on and sings, "And farewell, friends, thus Thisbe ends. Adieu, adieu, adieu." And then they all get up and dance. Now, if you don't make the ranges extreme and you don't have a whole lot of long pieces, Pyramus has two arias. He has the biggest part, but he doesn't really have much else to do except the duet. And Thisbe has one sort of arioso moment, and she has the duet, and she has the biggest single aria at the end, which is a ground bass lament. In the style more or less of Purcell, although the harmonic structure sounds more like Stravinsky. None of the parts are too big. It's short. It's, you know, no extreme ranges. So lots and lots of people can do it. Of course, we have people who can do much more difficult things. I mean, Aleko on this is a much bigger piece, but it's the same people doing Aleko as doing Pyramus and Thisbe.
Oh, so the casts are the same throughout the...
Well, it's the same group of people, and they reconfigured themselves to do the three operas. And in the second performance, they reconfigure themselves yet again. So everybody has different roles in the second performance from the first.
You already mentioned the role of Wall. There's also a part for Moonlight or Moonshine.
Moonshine, yeah. Moonshine. Now, one wonders if moonshine meant illegal whiskey in the early 17th century, but it certainly means that now. And Moonshine has two lines, but he has also props because, you know, the man in the moon has different things depending on what culture you have. But in Elizabethan England, the man in the moon was widely viewed as having a thorn bush and a lantern and a dog. Then you can see these things, supposedly, if you look at the moon closely enough. So anyway, the prologue introduces all the characters. And he says, "This man with lanthorn, dog, and bush of thorn presenteth moonshine. For if you would know, by moonshine did these lovers meet at Nina's tomb, there to woo." This is totally ridiculous. So anyway, there's this guy who stands there. And he has a lantern, which he says, "This lanthorn doth the horned moon present." And I don't know if lanthorn is really a word or if Shakespeare just made it up, because he was prone, so that you have lanthorn and horned moon, which is ridiculous in itself in that context. And of course, there's the thorn bush as well as the lanthorn. So, I mean, it's just one wonderful play on words after another. But anyway, we actually have a dog. I don't think that's too much to give away. If you like animals on stage, here's your chance. I don't think they have Lully animals going on. So you can see Molly the dog make her debut in the part of the dog of Moonshine in Pyramus and Thisbe by Neely Roos.
What was it like in Pyramus and Thisbe to work with a pre-existing text like Shakespeare? I mean, as opposed to working with a new libretto.
Well, that is a very interesting question. In the first place, the librettist is dead, so I could do whatever I wanted to with impunity. But I think I had the spirit of it, so that all the repetitions that one – I actually like repetitions in opera. I think they serve a very real purpose. That was one thing. I didn't have any feedback, so I could do what I wanted to. Let's put it that way. But the other thing is, Shakespeare is just. I mean, he's the best playwright in the language, right? So you're dealing with something that is it really, really works on the stage. I knew that if I didn't get in the way of the words with my music, it would work as a piece of musical theater. And even though it's completely taken out of context, the text, the words are that strong in and of themselves. And also there's the remarkably Wagnerian device of having the prologue tell the whole story before. People think that's an invention of Wagner. It's not an invention of Wagner at all in the first place. In the second place, it really works under certain circumstances. I happen to like it even in Wagner, where a lot of people don't get it. But anyway, in this case, Shakespeare is telling the whole story through the prologue. And actually, all the characters come out on stage and mime the story. So the entire story is presented, of course, as a spoof. To the audience, and then enacted in more or less in real time. So you have the fast-forward version of the story, and then you have the unfolding in real time sort of version of the story. And that is very operatic. So I was given as a posthumous gift by Mr. Shakespeare, who probably wasn't thinking of this, the opportunity to write a coherent one-act opera just right there.
Neely Bruce, the composer of Pyramus and Thisbe, which will be performed as part of the Advanced Opera Workshop on April the 20th at 7 p.m. and the 21st at 4 p.m. in Musical Arts Center, room 301. Neely, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, David.